It's my pleasure today to welcome Run Almog from DriveNets. Run is the head of product strategy for DriveNets, and DriveNets is a relatively new community member to OCP, but really leading the way in open networking. So Run, welcome. Thank you very much for making the time today.
Thank you, Steve. Very happy to be here with you.
Great. So Run, tell us a little bit about yourself and how you kind of got into the IT business.
Okay. About 20 years have passed, perhaps even a little bit more. Started off in the service provider space, coming from Siemens, Nokia at the time, and then moved on to networking, which is more on the data center side, with Mellanox for almost a decade. And primarily working into data centers, building networks, building switches, disaggregation, separating hardware from software, the OCP, none of this is foreign to me.
Wow, so almost a decade at Mellanox. So you do have a pretty deep background in networking. And so I'm sure that there's many people in the audience who may not know of DriveNets. So share, what is DriveNets and how big are you? What are you doing? What markets are you serving? And what solutions do you provide?
All right. DriveNets counts about 300 employees as of now. We're building networks the same way as clouds are being built, meaning that same as what you have in a cloud, that the resources are allocated dynamically upon demand and not rigidly, so that a server can actually serve more than a single application and it's purposed to several. Via virtualization, we are doing the same, or we are applying the same technology to networking, looking at the pool of network resources, what's coming eventually from the NPU as a pool of resources, and we allocate these resources upon demand per the specific application which is being run on the device. One of the first applications that we have developed is routing. That's trivial, that's obvious, but other applications can pop up at any given time. And when looking into the future, these applications or these types of services that are going to be mounted onto today's networks are not even known. 5G is opening up new frontiers. The telco edge is opening up new frontiers. All of this is not even fully defined. So you need a platform that can host any type of new service that will come along, as well as be able to optimize the allocation of resources, or to better utilize the resources, primarily of the NPU, the CPU running on the box. These are the most expensive interfaces and are the ones that are being consumed first. So our solution is establishing a platform on top of which all these types of services can run and still be able to allocate the proper resources, same way as a cloud or a virtualized server can serve multiple VMs or multiple containers.
Yeah, so running this cloud-enabled networking infrastructure, it leads me to the definition of disaggregation and open networking. So you hear a lot of people talk about their definition of what disaggregation means or my definition of open networking. How does DriveNets and how do you define disaggregation and open networking? What do you see are the major advantages?
I see disaggregation in three tiers. First off, and this is perhaps well known, separating hardware from software makes a lot of sense. It makes a lot of sense financially. It makes a lot of sense in terms of development of two elements as standalone. It enables new companies, new startup companies to focus on their core of competence instead of trying to do everything at the same place, in the same place. So this is tier one. Tier two of disaggregation, the way I see it, is taking a large rigid device such as a big chassis and breaking this into standalone atomic elements. These are the white boxes that we're using. It opens up a lot of capabilities. If eventually the chassis has a lot of advantages to it and also a lot of limitations. The very fact that you have a rigid box that is limiting your size, your power, your cooling capabilities, all of this is being encapsulated into this metal enclosure, and that's a limitation. So this level of disaggregation is what I call tier two. And tier three is taking the actual software, the actual network operating system, and distributing this into sub-elements. So having a NOS which is modular is one thing. Having a NOS which is distributed is another thing. It means that you can allocate or run any type of any module from within your NOS anywhere in the network, and not just in one location where the software is being located. If you just do tier one, separate hardware from software, what eventually will happen is that the customer will group these two together and end up with one unified box. So you broke it up and you connected it back again,
and you put it back together. Yeah.
You put it back together and you end up with the same thing that you had like 10 or 15 years ago. When you take the software and you break it down into their models, each running in different locations, even in the network, then you're able to capitalize on the actual resources and gain actual utilization of these resources without, you know, grouping it all in into a unified device.
Yeah, I like the way that you break that down into those three different categories. Now, when you say going back, if you're not careful, you end up with the same thing you had 10 or 15 years ago. I noticed that a lot of your top management have come from Cisco. So how has their history with a more proprietary solution impacted their view on open networking, and how is that? And then I would say also, when you're working with customers, they're often reluctant to move away from people like Cisco. So what would you say to those companies that are sitting on a lot of Cisco engineers in their effort to move this to the new way of doing open networking?
Okay. Well, 15 years looking into what Cisco has been doing, it's more like 30 or even more. The world of networking is still dominated by Cisco, and Cisco have a lot to lose. Now, while service providers, Cisco's customers, are looking for transformation for a long time. Just some names that pop up, like NFV as a concept, is a whole attempt for transformation. And eventually, if anybody should benefit from this, it's the service providers, actually a lot of others as well. But if anybody should lose, it's the traditional incumbent from such a transformation approach. So Cisco, being the trusted advisor for service providers for many years, was placed in the best position to prevent these transformation initiatives from actually fulfilling their potential. This is what's been happening over the years. It still is happening in certain aspects. Coming from Cisco, from inside Cisco, you know exactly what are the metrics and how this is being done, you know, from the inside out. So coming out of Cisco gives you much better visibility as to what's actually going on, you know, behind the scenes of network transformation, and why hasn't it been successful up until now. Companies who are locked with the concept of a unified router with a CLI to operate it, we can serve these customers as well. Eventually, after you disaggregate and have a network operating system running a routing service such as what we are providing, eventually it can allow all of this cluster of white boxes to act, behave, interface to third-party equipment, and be reflected to your management systems as a single unified router. Very big one, but a single unified router from any aspect which is managerial. So from that respect, we can give the same user experience as what you would get by running a traditional router. And then, of course, all the additional goodies that come with disaggregation are on top of you know, fulfilling the very basic guidelines, the very basic attributes of a standard router. That means scale, that means resiliency, that means reliability, that means security. Anything which makes this carrier grade is kind of in there already.
Yeah, so it would be similar in the terms of security and support that you would get with a traditional proprietary model, the way that you and you're working with the ODMs have structured it, correct?
Yes, this is true. Anything from operating the system and having it, you know, fulfill the basic requirements of a high capacity carrier grade router are provided as a standard, as a default. First off, we need to replace something in the network, and we need to be at least as good as the traditional ones.
So there's been a lot of activity happening in open networking since the beginning of the year. What is your opinion of all the mergers and acquisition activity that's happened in the space just in the last 6 to 12 months?
In the last 6 to 12 months, I would say NVIDIA has made very nice strides into expanding beyond pure compute capabilities, what they have been doing in the world of HPC, data centers, machine learning, and now expanding this onto the network. That's a big confrontation with Intel. Intel, of course, has done somewhat the same, taking in networking companies and again trying to expand their portfolio to be unified end to end. It's a big clash. It's a big clash between giants in this aspect. This is mainly within, you know, inside of the data center. Haven't seen much of this, you know, outside of the data centers in the telco space. I'm looking at this scene as someone who has been active in it for the whole duration of my tenure with Mellanox. So somewhat of an outside observer at this point, coming from DriveNets, as we are more active on the service provider space.
Yeah. And I know, speaking of big powerhouses and telco, you've been doing a lot of work with AT&T. So can you explain what you're doing with them and how you're working with their team?
Yeah, sure. Our engagement with AT&T started almost from the birth of the company. Our trajectory was to have a virtual router. You can call this an NFV running on a high capacity server. And we brought this solution to a level of production in terms of its sustainability, in terms of its robustness. The issue is, and I guess the industry has figured that out also, is that this type of a solution doesn't really scale. And when you put it to the test of scale, then it's cost prohibitive to deploy such a solution in mass numbers. And this is what brought us to white boxes. So we took our IP, everything that we wrote in terms of a fully functional router, and we did the necessary adaptations to have this run on white boxes. And that was a very deep and heavy investment to do that kind of migration. Eventually, what we ended up is a solution which is as flexible as a software which is running on the server, and as robust or capacity capable as what you would get running on a dedicated hardware silicon machine. So kind of catching the best of both worlds. And of course, AT&T was the primary target for this. Intent was to run this type of a solution. Of course, AT&T have a whole agenda of promoting disaggregation, disaggregated solutions. And in this case, it was targeted for their core network deployment. I cannot really put an exact date to this, but it's close to a year. So once AT&T made the announcement about say 2 months ago, it was after we were already in their production network and serving the purpose of a core router with our clusters. Clusters span to about 200 terabit per second. That's the largest capacity that we installed into AT&T's network. Of course, we can do more. That was the requirement from that respect. And it's, you know, fully tested. It's running, as I mentioned before, you cannot go into AT&T without being carrier grade. It goes without saying, without going through painful testing by the AT&T team. So all of this is behind us, and we're in this kind of a deployment. Still working with AT&T on expansions to further core locations as well as other network use cases.
And so for those of people in the audience who may not be familiar with the solution that you implemented within AT&T, the DDC along with UFI space, what role does it play in the overall network and what exactly does the solution do?
The solution is implementing a core router. Core routers typically have an attribute of needing to have many, many ports, a very high capacity, and have it all run without dropping. Not too many services in terms of the variety of services or the amount of streams that is running through. This is not a peering device. But in terms of capacity, in terms of bandwidth, it's very challenged. Our solution, or the DDC solution, is an array of white boxes connected in a factory topology. We have two types of boxes, kind of white box, which is like a line card in a chassis, and a fabric line card, which is like the backplane of a chassis. All the line cards are connected to all the fabrics. All the fabrics are connected to all the line cards, just like you would have in a chassis. Now, the whole thing is being orchestrated by our network cloud software. We have two pieces, our network operating system known as DNOS, and our orchestrator known as DNOR, D-N-O-R. One is providing the actual functionality from the bottom up, and one is providing everything to do with orchestration from the top down. Eventually, what AT&T are using in their network is a router. It's a very, very big router. Everything on the inside is being taken care of by either DNOS or DNOR. From the perspective of AT&T, it's a very, very big router. And of course, other use cases vary. The size is not always the key item. Sometimes it's the service scaling that is the reason to go with this kind of a solution. But the pillars remain the same pillars. The building blocks are the same building blocks. We're still using the same white boxes, two types of white boxes. The software is the same, DNOS and DNOR. The ecosystem that we're working with is the same ecosystem. It's just that the use case is changing.
I see. So you work with a lot of OCP members. How has your relationship with OCP impacted your business? And how are you viewing your involvement in an open source community?
You know, as I mentioned before, OCP opens up a lot of opportunities for anybody dealing with disaggregation. We are working with several ODMs. It makes a lot of sense for our customer to have multiple options in terms of which ODM or which devices they want to enter into their network. It has to do with price, it has to do with port count, it has to do with size and power, a lot of attributes which are directly related to the box itself. So multiple hardware options are important. On the other aspect, from a perspective of an ODM, I would like to have more than one software operating my boxes. This will enable me to sell more boxes. So from both sides, software and hardware, having a unified or a generic interface between the hardware and the software makes a lot of sense. Now, putting DriveNets together with Cisco, together with UFI space, together with Acton in the same room, and having these four teams work together to establish a standard, that's a very big challenge. Having OCP as the platform to kind of host all of this activity makes a lot of sense. So in this case, we're using OCP, or we're actually enjoying the benefits that the OCP platform is granting us. One of the latest works that we're doing is to establish an automatic firmware upgrade for a white box, and we're working with several ODMs on this as well, as kind of a contribution to OCP.
And that's what's great coming from a software company and seeing the value of the open source hardware community. And you're really a shining example of how to embrace and work within a hardware community, not something that is typical of most software companies. So you guys should be commended for that. So as you look at 2021, what's on the roadmap and what's next for DriveNets?
What's next? Up until now, most of what we have been pitching and deploying is routing services. Routing services can be core, like what we're doing with AT&T. It can be peering, like we're doing with other service providers, aggregation or edge, network edge. All of these are eventually routing services, and each has its unique capabilities and attributes, but they're all routing at the end of the day. Our platform is establishing multi-service capability, not only routing. Routing is a very dignified service by itself, but it's not the only service which a network needs to cater. So anything to do with DDoS prevention as a function, firewalls, DPI, load balancing, additional network functions which originally would be hosted on an appliance can now be hosted on the devices themselves, on these white boxes, and orchestrated by the same software tools that you have within the network cloud. So we are in the process of launching these new services, not only such that are coming from DriveNets. All of the routing services that I mentioned before have been developed here in-house. When it comes to other network services, there are expert companies who are dealing with this, and we are establishing this, these relationships with third-party providers to have their services being containerized, and then these can be run throughout the network. There is a lot of sense to have a firewall which is located on the device, on the network device itself, and not in the back of the network on a server. It enables a lot more flexibility, and it enables better control over what's actually happening or what's actually running within the network. That's just an example of firewall and the services which are well known. But as we're looking forward into launching of 5G networks, 5G is all about data-driven services, and as such, not really sure what these will be, but there will definitely need some instantiation of these services within the network. And this is exactly what Network Cloud is granting service providers. One more comment, which is worth mentioning. The Network Cloud enables a disconnect between the network growth and the network cost. When you want to replace equipment, this should be for the purpose of expanding the bandwidth. Right, this makes sense. But when you're adding new functionality, you should not have the need to replace your network as well. And this is what Network Cloud, with the multi-service capabilities, is enabling. Now, this enables a whole new aspect of circular economy, enabling these outdated devices being pushed out of the network and repurposed for other purposes, either within the same network or even elsewhere, because the entire functionality, again, is controlled by software, and the only reason to shift boxes from side to side is the capacity aspect. So in this case, maintaining or maximizing the utilization of existing hardware gets to a much higher level, and the utilization of whatever resources that you invested in your network in terms of TCO, it's getting to a higher point.
So the circular economy is not just applying to the server side anymore. You can do it across networking.
Exactly. Same logic as is being fulfilled with servers throughout the world. As we have seen it, it's coming from the hyperscalers. It's coming from high performance computing traditions. In this case, now it's coming to the network side as well. That's true.
Well, I think you guys are poised to capitalize on the growth of open networking, supposed to be close to $1.5 billion here by 2023. And we're expecting DriveNets to lead the way in some of the software that's being certified and validated and being used within open compute. So thank you very much, Run. Really appreciate the time. I'll be back with my key takeaways from my conversation with Run today.
With pleasure, Steve. My pleasure, and great to talk to all of you guys. Thanks.
I really enjoyed my conversation today with Run. He was coming at this from a software angle, so it was interesting to hear his perspective. I especially like the three tiers of disaggregation when he talked about separating the hardware and the software as being tier one, then tier two is breaking apart that rigid device on the chassis, and then the third is the distribution or the sub-elements around the network operating system. The second key takeaway that I had was around his thoughts on why transformation has taken this long or what has prevented transformation from happening faster in the networking space. And that's specific to a few of the legacy OEM vendors. And it's always great to hear perspectives of somebody that's been in that environment and moved to this new open networking environment to hear their perspectives on both sides. And then lastly was his appreciation for circular economy in the networking space. Most of the time people think about the networking or the circular economy relative to say servers or other components, but he's pretty bullish on the opportunity within circular economy for the networking devices. And I would anticipate their ability to enable the software components even further downstream in the circular economy. So again, great conversation with Run. If you have any questions about DriveNets, please feel free to reach out to me and I'm happy to connect you with Run. You can also see all of their devices and their software, which devices are running the DriveNet software on our OCP marketplace. So I encourage you to check that out as well. So my thanks again to Run and the team at DriveNets for being great OCP members.